Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Spring Creek Mine, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Conference, and an interview with Republican candidate for Montana Secretary of State, Scott Sales. It's Wednesday, August 28th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Yellowstone National Park closed a backcountry campsite in the southeast part of the park due to a new half-acre wildfire yesterday. Rachel Kramer reports.
The Brimstone Bay Fire was detected Monday afternoon on the eastern shore of Yellowstone Lake. Park officials say it was likely caused by lightning. It's burning in a spruce and fir forest. The Brimstone Bay campsite is closed until further notice. The thoroughfare trail is still open. Hikers can check its status at Yellowstone's Backcountry Situation Report webpage. Staff will continue to monitor the fire along with three others that are active. Fire danger in the park is currently high. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A recently updated Medicare rule will help fund rural residency programs for new doctors across the United States. Kayla DeRoche reports.
The rule change allows Medicare to subsidize physician training in critical access hospitals, funding that Montana's Democratic Senator John Tester has advocated for.
It's really important. And if they get that experience and they have an option to be able to work in, say, a Lewistown or a Sheridan or a Billings or a New York City, they may choose a place like Lewistown over going to work in one of the bigger cities in this country.
Billings Clinic honored Tester for his work to support physician training in rural communities Tuesday. Tester says he sees the need for residents to train in places that don't have the sprawling campuses or the resources of medical hubs like those in Billings. Billings Clinic sends some of its medical residents to Montana's 48 critical access hospitals. Those are rural hospitals with fewer than 25 inpatient beds. Billings Clinic previously relied on funding from the Helmsley Charitable Trust to fund rural rotations in Lewistown, Montana, and Sheridan, Wyoming. The rule change goes into effect October 1st. Kayla DeRoche, YPR News.
A $2 million grant for retraining workers expected to be displaced with the closure of two units of a coal-fired power plant in southeastern Montana remains untapped because plant owners haven't given the workers layoff notices. Officials with Talon, Montana say they hope to avoid a significant layoff and will still need workers to decommission the two units that are closing. The Montana Department of Environmental Quality opened a 30-day public comment period yesterday for a proposed major revision at the Spring Creek coal mine in southeast Montana. Rachel Kramer reports the revision could allow about 72 million tons of coal to be mined.
DEQ released a draft environmental impact statement Tuesday for a proposed revision that would add nearly 980 acres for mining and infrastructure projects at the Spring Creek Mine. The addition would occur within the mine's existing permit boundary on Bureau of Land Management land. The revision would also extend the life of the mine from 2027 to 2031 and require more post-mine remediation measures for wildlife habitat. The mining company has agreed to provide $107,000 in compensatory mitigation to go to the Montana Sage-Grouse Program for future projects. A DEQ spokesperson says the department receives the revision application for Spring Creek in 2013 from Cloud Peak Energy, the nation's third largest coal company by production volume. It filed for bankruptcy in May. Navajo Transitional Energy Company recently received court approval to purchase the mine near Decker, along with two others in Wyoming. DEQ will host an open house the evening of Wednesday, September 11th at the Bighorn County Extension Office in Hardin. DEQ will accept public comments through September 26th. More information about the proposed expansion and how to comment are on our website, ypradio.org. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes kicked off a conference yesterday on missing and murdered Indigenous people. The three-day event is aimed at raising awareness about the work being done to understand the scope of the issue, both on the reservation and in the state. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
This is the second conference the tribes have held this year since passing a resolution in January that created a local working group. Jamie Plouffe is a member and organizer of the MMIP conference this week. She says the event will focus on getting locals plugged into creating an action plan.
And I think what we really want to focus on is what do we as a community do so that we're not just leaving this conference and saying, okay, see you at the next one.
The sentiment that this wasn't just another conference was very real for many in the room who shared their experiences. Julian Draper was one of those people. She says she was sexually trafficked in Montana and was attracted to the conference because she wants actual change in the local community.
The more this goes around and the more people come around and see what's happening in the, I guess, the community, they'll be more aware of what's happening to the females and the people.
Plouffe says some action is already being taken on the Flathead Reservation. The local working group will be speaking about physical and internet safety for at-risk youth in schools this fall. Data was also a large topic of discussion Tuesday, and members of the Montana Missing Persons Clearinghouse and a statewide task force were on hand to talk about the numbers. Currently, Native Americans make up about a third of the 175 people in the state's missing persons database. However, that number is thought to be higher, something Plouffe says is a result of racial misidentification.
The data just really needs to be researched more to say, no, these are how many Native women are missing.
State Deputy Attorney General Melissa Schlichting sits on the Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force. She says the group is working to foster better communication between tribal, state, and federal partners in order to understand the full scope of the missing and murdered Indigenous person issue in the state.
That's one of the primary responsibilities of the task force, is to create a new network that will plug into our existing NCIC and Missing Persons Clearinghouse so that we are sure that we're capturing all of the missing persons in Montana and we're adequately addressing all of those issues.
Efforts to get an accurate historical count of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Montana were reflected by over 100 paper bag luminaries in the back of the room. The names on the bags date back to the early 1900s. Those bags signify the awareness that already exists in Indian country. But those like Phaedra Swab, who lives on the reservation, have their eyes on raising awareness outside of that bubble.
But it's another thing to be able to take that message and go outside where people are uncomfortable hearing it. And to me, that's a good thing.
Swab and others' calls for action have been gaining traction. Four state laws surrounding missing and murdered Indigenous people were passed this year, and the state task force is due to submit a report to the legislature with its recommendations for additional legislation the fall of 2020. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio.
Montana's Republican U.S. Senator Steve Daines says he's traveling to China next week to continue agricultural trade discussions. Daines says his trip is an effort to bring Montana agriculture to the forefront of the ongoing trade negotiations between the U.S. and China. Candidates for statewide offices in Montana are gearing up for next year's primaries. Republican State Senator Scott Sales announced in March he's running for Secretary of State. He recently spoke with me about election security and his plans to develop communication with the county clerks and recorders. Well, thank you so much, Senator Sales, for coming and talking with us at Yellowstone Public Radio today.
Glad to be here.
You've worked with the Montana legislature for 16 years now. How would your past experience influence you as Secretary of State?
The legislature works closely with the Secretary of State's office. I've had the opportunity and the privilege and the honor of being Speaker of the House and President of the Senate two different times. So from a leadership standpoint, I understand how to run big organizations with a bunch of diverse responsibility, and I think that's prepared me well as my private sector experience I've had in my personal life.
After foreign interference in the 2016 presidential election, what would you do to make sure Montana's elections are secure?
Well, I think they are secure. There was no interference. There was an effort to interfere, but this is nothing new. And, you know, governments have been trying to interfere in our elections way before 2016. This is something that's been going on forever. And even though, you know, the United States is, in my opinion, tries to be the arbiter of fairness and freedom around the world, let's be honest, we interfere in other people's elections too. We've interfered, from what I understand, in Israel's recent election. We tried to run interference in Ukraine's election. So this is what foreign countries do to try to gain the upper hand on an opposition-type government. With that said, we do need to be diligent. We do need to be aware that this problem exists, and we need to take the necessary actions to make sure that we're insulated, both at the state level and at the federal level, from foreign entities being able to interfere with our elections.
Last election, Montana voters passed a law that limits the number of absentee ballots that can be dropped off by a single person. How do you see this impacting the turnout in 2020?
You know, I think it's not going to have that large an impact on it. I supported that bill. I thought it was a good idea. So it's imperative that we take the necessary steps to, not to impede people's ability to vote, but just to make sure that we have people voting that deserve, that first of all, they need to be a citizen of the United States, and second of all, they need to be a resident of Montana, and that the people that have the constitutional right to vote are able to vote. It was just a small step, I think, in order to keep, a little bit of malfeasance from entering into the system. I think the people that really take their personal responsibility of voting and that citizen's responsibility, I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
You said that absentee ballot restriction was a small step in making sure that elections are available to the people who have the constitutional right to vote in that election. What are some other steps that you could see as making that more true?
Well, you know, I've never supported same-day voter registration. That passed back in 2005, and if I remember right, it was a Republican Secretary of State, Brad Johnson, pushed for that. Those of us that are avid hunters here in Montana, and when you move here, you have to be a resident for 6 months before you can get a hunting license. I don't think it's too much to ask of the voters maybe to get to the polls or get to the clerk and quarters office and get registered to vote a couple days before the election. Hunting's a privilege. Voting's a constitutional right, and it affects a myriad of different, obviously, decisions. Who gets elected, how things are funded, all kinds of things. So we need to take that responsibility extremely seriously as citizens, and I think that would be another small step in the right direction that would make the job easier for the clerks and recorders, but also bring a little bit more security and integrity to the system by just backing up that same-day voter registration maybe a day or two before the election, maybe the Friday before.
Is there anything that Corey Stapleton has done as Secretary of State that you would want to reverse?
I've heard some comments from some of the business people in the state that the software and the website isn't as user-friendly as it could be for people that are trying to register their documents with the state. That's something I would try to streamline, make it easier. You know, in terms of how the elections are handled, I know that there's a little friction. I don't know to how large a degree, but I've heard it from different clerks and recorders and individuals involved in that. I would like to approach that probably with a more partnership type of approach, welcoming to the opinions of the local election officials and the clerks and recorders that deal with the Secretary of State's office. And my plan over the next 10 months between now and the primary is to visit all 56 counties and to meet with as many of those individuals as they have time and I have the bandwidth to do that.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with Yellowstone Public Radio today.
You bet. Take care.
That was state legislator Scott Sales, who's running for the Republican nomination for Montana Secretary of State in 2020. Tomorrow, we'll hear from Bryce Bennett, who's seeking the Democratic nomination for the same office. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.